Anyway, I chose this topic today because it talks about optimism. Optimism and healing. And I think what we have is, I think there's a real confusing thing about optimism. Because you can go out and read hundreds of titles of books about power of positive thinking. How many of you heard all those books? I mean, thousands of books. Power of positive thinking. What you think is what you become and all of that. So I think before we even start, I think we've got to kind of get a working definition of what you think optimism is. What is optimism? Is it just believing? You heard, those of you who were in the 9 o'clock service, heard Pastor Kevin talk about plans for this church and our overcrowdedness in our younger Sabbath school classes and our bulging and the belief that we're meant to have more people come and how are we going to do that. So is that optimistic to say, okay, by year 2013 we're going to have a new facility that's going to incorporate the Burton and this? Is that optimism? Someone says yes? Optimistic to think that. Okay, but anybody think that's not optimistic? How many think it's foolish? So it's optimistic to say, okay, in 2013, which is 2010, we've got 3 years, we're going to have an integrated facility that will have a Burton Academy, a school, and a worship service, and a facility for all of our things.
I'm more optimistic. I think we'll do it.
Okay, 2011. So we've got someone's going to say 2011.
Since our church treasures and our finances, we might want to throw the word practical.
He started twitching,
huh? He was twitching at 13 and now 11. He's like, whoa, we got to.
I'm watching Trent, though.
He's in prayer, intercessory prayer. That's where we start. Anyway, what does optimism mean in your definition? What is optimism?
Hopeful.
Hopeful for good things? Okay. Hopeful for good things. How about the rest of you? What is optimism?
I think optimism is a go-forward attitude rather than a go-backwards or a standstill.
Go-forward attitude. Okay, so we're talking, she introduced the word of attitude. Go-forward attitude versus going backwards or standing still. Okay, how about the rest of you?
It's a leaning toward the possibilities instead of the impossibilities.
Leaning toward possibilities. Okay, so we're leaning and we're moving toward possibilities versus impossibilities. How about the rest of you? What's hopeful?
Giving more mental weight to the positive than the negative.
Giving more mental weight to positive versus negative. Okay, so we're kind of keeping the scales tipped on the positive.
For me, Roger, optimism basically is a mental state that ensues when you know that God is with you always. No matter what you're going through, no matter where you're at, God is with you always. And so that it's a mental state that ensues when you know that.
So when you are acknowledging and recognizing God is with you, it's a mental state of what? What's the mental state?
Well, we call that mental state optimism.
Optimism. Okay, so that mental state that we call is optimism. So when we say 2011 we're going to have a new facility, then that's putting that out there as where that's going to be moving toward that. Okay? Anybody else? What's your definition?
Well, what just crossed my mind is what God says, does he have an optimistic view on more people will be saved or a pessimistic view that more will be lost?
I don't know. What's your answer?
I believe he's very optimistic.
He's very optimistic. Was he optimistic with Noah? How many rooms did he build on the ark for all the people that were going to come?
He's optimistic, but he's realistic.
Okay, so how do we balance optimism and realism? I mean, here, how many years did Noah preach? 120 years. You talk about an ineffective evangelist. I mean, you're preaching and you're building this ark. For 120 years, and how many came on there?
Eight.
Eight? His family. I saw a hand up over here before.
Yeah, the optimism is something that we have. God knows the future, and we should just gladly accept His will, however it happens.
Okay, God knows the future, so for us it's accepting His will.
I think that's an important key.
Okay, and what does that mean in practical reality? What does that mean in everyday?
However it turns out, we'll be thankful.
Okay, however it turns out, we'll be thankful.
Because He knows the bigger picture.
Okay, He knows the bigger picture. Go ahead.
And to me, optimism is anticipating a good outcome no matter what is the current circumstance.
Okay, anticipating a good outcome no matter what the experience is. Now, that's an interesting point, is we anticipate a good outcome no matter what the current experience is. Ernie years or months, or I don't know when, he talked about, he goes to work every day, and he puts away everything, and when he gets there at work, everything's okay. I think you said something like that. You focus in on, and now is that optimism, or is that just a good actor? I mean, I think we have to look at these real, what does it mean? I mean, what does it really mean to say, I'm an optimist. We can sit here and cite studies about how optimistic people who have cancer are healed more quickly than people that are and heal or have the cancer goes in remission versus those that don't. And the danger of that is when I get cancer or if I get cancer, then I think if I don't go away, then what happens? I must not be an optimistic person. I must be, you know, there's a real challenge because, you know, we can think, well, it's just because we've got to think optimistic. The Jews had a belief. If you were wealthy, if you were taken care of, everything was going well in your life, you had done well in God's sight and you were doing good. So, optimism can become something we almost use as a check-off thing. Am I optimistic enough? Is it going to work this time? Am I, you know, how optimistic am I? Well, I'm, you know, I had a good friend of mine, Jim McLeod, who was actually a minister and then taught bilingual education in New Jersey for 30 years. And he had cancer. And he and I would talk, and one time he said to me, there's more of a challenge to know how to believe when you're not healed than when you're healed. And he died about 4 years ago. And to this day, I still think of him and still would like to pick up my phone and call him. His phone's number's still in my phone. John Perryman, this class. How did you see optimism demonstrated by him? How'd you see it? You what?
He was just always loving and accepting and showed that.
Loving, accepting, and shared that.
With everyone.
With everyone.
For me, John just knew that he had a relationship with God. And even when he went in, I guess I wasn't there, but
you know, in my experiences with John, when he would be here, he was always affirmative of his gratefulness to be here. There was never a moment he said, oh, I just didn't wonder about getting here. When he was here, he was here. Now, I knew there were weeks he wasn't here because it was either physically impossible or whatever the reality is. There was a lot of things going on. But when he was here, he was here. And to me, that always spoke volumes about him as a person, you know, and how he came about and dealt with his experiences that he was going through. Go ahead.
Up till the time that he went into surgery, he was sitting there grading papers in the hospital or whatever.
So he was anticipating getting those papers ready for those students and coming out of that. So, to me, that's a powerful thing, is when we move forward in life experiences And part of that is recognizing how we move forward in them. Knowing how we what does it mean? What does it really mean? Come on in. I think there's a seat here and one over here. You know, when we talk about optimism, in the quarterly they had a Norman Cousins. Anybody ever hear of Norman Cousins? You tell us what you know about him, Skip. I mean, what you heard of him.
I don't know that much. You asked if I heard of him.
Uh-huh, heard of him. Well, he'd written several books, and part of the thing that he had was he had some, I'm not sure what it was, cancer or something that was really debilitating. And he was going through the medical procedures. He was going through all of the chemicals and everything the medicine had to offer. And finally, he was getting worse, and he was sick. Finally, he just closed his doors and said, I'm not going to do any more medicine. And he went and he ordered all of these old soupy sales videos, the Thomas, you know, the funny ones. And then it talks about in there, funniest home videos. He went and brought those in, and he sat in his bed and laughed and laughed and laughed. And actually, he healed himself. When I said he healed himself, he suddenly had a different perspective. He changed his focus from the sickness, the illness, and all the things that were going on to everything became, he laughed. And it wasn't, say, a merry heart. Like medicine. You know what? And I thought about that. Well, is it just we need to laugh? Have you ever been around somebody that laughs inappropriately? And what is the laughter about then? Anxiety. It's about anxiety. And so is it just laughter? To me, it goes back to the same thing we're talking about with optimism. What's the laughter coming from? Is it coming from a sense of just, at this moment, I can be absorbed in this experience and really get lost into it? I can just totally get lost in it. And in that being lost in laughter, something happened to his body. Suddenly, he wasn't focused on, how am I going to get better? What do I got to do next? What is this medicine going to do? But it just like he totally lost his sense of dread. So it's not just laughter. It's what does the laughter represent? He let go. He quit striving to, quote, get better, and he just started being absorbed in the moment. He let himself really be in that moment of laughter. And talks about the healing, and he's written several books that are fascinating to look at. But we have to recognize that what we do has a tremendous impact. And it probably is more of an impact because of what we're believing when we're doing those things. Maybe there's probably thousands of stories of people that laughed and then died. So, I mean, you know, we tend to look for hard and fast things. Okay, we got to have a positive attitude. We got to laugh. We got to do this. And it becomes a laundry list of things we're going to do that's going to then create a world that we think we're okay in. Well, maybe it's not creating the world we're okay in. It's just realizing that. You know, you look at some of the stories of people in the Bible. Elijah had a mountaintop experience and then was afraid of a woman. And ran. You know? Got very depressed. Exhausted himself. Then what did God do? He fed him. Gave him some water. Let him go back to sleep. You know, it's beautiful to look at these kinds of stories to realize that sometimes we think we should have certain results based upon certain things. Well, I've got to be an optimistic person so I can be blah, 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 blah. Instead of what does it really mean to be an optimistic person? Anybody hear of James Stockdale? Stockdale?
Tell me about it,
Skip.
No,
you're talking my language.
Okay, Skip. Good.
Medal of Honor recipient, Admiral and Vice Presidential candidate for Ross Perot. Passed away about 4 or 5 years ago. Very fine gentleman. I had the opportunity to meet him.
Did you really? What was your experience in meeting him?
He's a very humble man.
Mm-hmm.
Very humble man.
Mm-hmm.
Beaten severely as a prisoner of war by the Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
Kept his faith.
Kept his faith. And you know who he said didn't survive the prison of war? The optimism. The optimistic people. To enhance a little of his story, he was a prisoner of war for 7 years in Vietnam. And he was in a situation where they, I don't know if any of you remember, but when they that time during that time period, they would parade prisoners and they would have, you know, similar things are done today. And he decided he was not going to be used by the Viet Cong for show, for PR. So when he got word that he was going to be paraded, he went and he cut his face. And when they then were going to put something on his head, he beat himself with his stool so hard that his head swelled up. So they could not put that on him. Because he was so determined that he was not going to be used by this. And I want to read to you some of the things that that he said. There's a book called Good to Great, which is a very fascinating book. But this is a little about his experience. When told by his captors that he was to be paraded in public, Stockdale slit his scalp with a razor to purposely disfigure himself so the captors could not use him as propaganda. When they covered his head with a hat, Stockdale beat himself with a stool until his face was swollen beyond recognition. He told them in no uncertain terms that they would never use him. When Stockdale heard that other prisoners were dying under the torture, he slit his wrists and told them that he preferred death to submission. And then it goes on, tells them. But here's some of the things he said in this book called Good to Great. Collins asked him, "Who didn't make it out of Vietnam?" Stockdale replied, "Oh, that's easy, the optimist. Oh, they were the ones who said, we're going to be out by Christmas. And Christmas would come and Christmas would go. Then they'd say, we're going to be out by Easter. And Easter would come and Easter would go. And then Thanksgiving. And then it would be Christmas again. And they died of a broken heart." So you think about his experience. These people that have to put those things, we're going to have this by this. We're going to be out by this time. Now you say, well, they're being optimistic. But there's a reality of the present situation. And that's a real challenging thing to recognize. Optimism doesn't ignore our present reality. We can sit and talk about it, 2011 having a church, but this man's going to be able to say, well, you can have it what you want, but do you want to be able to pay for it? Or you want to be able to secure the loans? You know, there's the reality. Now, to those, that has to be blended in optimism. Go ahead.
As a sales trainer, I teach my sales reps that optimism is enthusiasm with a plan.
With a plan. Okay? So, enthusiasm with a plan. When we have a plan, we can come forth with our own sense of purpose. Go ahead.
I also think of the three Hebrew boys who are very optimistic. They said, we know God is able, but if not, they were still just as content whether he delivered or didn't.
Absolutely. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Those are great. You know, you look at these stories and these are real life experiences. You know, you think, well, they could have just bent over and, you know, said, I got an itch while a certain time. Or, you know, they could have fallen to the ground, said, quit pushing me over. Or, you know, but it was just very simple to them. It wasn't, when I say it's simple, it was simple because they just understood what they were going to do. This was what their belief, and this didn't fit with their belief. Stockdale goes on and he says, I never lost faith in the end of the story. I never doubted not only that I would get out, but also that I would prevail in the end and turn the experience into the divine event of my life, when in retrospect, I would never trade. Now, I think all of us have had experiences that we look back upon and we say, boy, that was horrendous. That was something I just really struggled with. But yet, here's saying, when we really recognize and learn and recognize the learning in that, we would never trade for it. He goes on and he says, this is a very important lesson. You must never confuse faith that you will prevail in the end, which you can never afford to lose, with the discipline to confront the most brutal facts of your current reality, whatever they might be. To me, that's a real blending of optimism with reality. He never lost faith in that which would prevail in the end, but he didn't forget the brutal reality of what he was in. Now, as Christians, we have the Bible. We read these stories. To me, that's just a wealth of recognition of we know the end. We have a wonderful record of how things have evolved. And when you really think about it, you know, anxiety. What is anxiety about? Fear?
Not letting go.
Not letting go? Maybe it's not studying that morning, so you're asking your mate, give me all the information you can.
No anxiety, I had faith.
But you think about it, you really recognize how many times in our life we're so caught in the moment of things that we lose sight of the reality that if we really believe in God and believe all these things that we profess, that there's really nothing to be anxious about. That to me is a powerful experience of recognition. And I think that is even more than just positive thinking or all of these pop psychology. That's a deep-rooted recognition of what are we, where are we, and who are we. Those three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they got in that fiery furnace and they knew what they believed. What a powerful, powerful experience to know what they believed, and there was not a conflict.
The verse that I've been reading for the last 2 weeks right before I go to bed is hitting right on what you're saying here. And uh-huh. So I've been impressed to share that verse.
Uh-huh.
And it's in Philippians 4. It says, always be full of joy in the Lord. I say it again, rejoice. Let everyone see that you are considerate in all you do. Remember the Lord's coming soon. Don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything and tell God what you need and thank Him for all He's done. Now, here's the part I like. If you do this, you will experience God's peace.
Wow.
And so I dwell upon that now. In fact, the last thing I do before I go to sleep, I'm going to wake up in the morning and go right back to it. Mm-hmm.
If you do that, you will experience God's peace.
I'm saying in my life, the anxiousness part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I've still got a hold of it a little bit. But
sure. Absolutely. And that's a powerful thing, is when we have that recognition, that it can take away a lot of that. Yesterday I had my man out to fix my sprinkler system. Fixed it, went there last night and turned it on at 6:30. I get up and it's working. Oh, great, my sprinkler system working. 7:30, it was still working. It wasn't turning off. And I thought, So I went out to where the man had done the work, and there was a valve there. Well, he didn't put a valve there. So there was no valve. So I thought, no valve to turn off. Don't have my tool that I usually have to turn off the main street. That'd be turn off all the water. Need to pray at church in a few minutes. Leading out in Sabbath school class. Walked into my garage, says, I've got to find that turnoff. I mean, I have that tool. I said, I've got to find it. And I kind of laughed and said, okay, God, here am I. So I went in there and, see, I'd broken my sprinkler system about 3 weeks ago. And what happened is I'd broken it by mowing over something. I didn't, you know, relatively new to this house, didn't know there was a valve there. And I basically busted the valve and I had water shooting up for about 40 minutes while, or about an hour while I called a, come on in. He's ready. So I had water shooting up in my, he's sitting up here. So I had water shooting up. And so I called the plumber because I couldn't find my turn off. I was so frustrated that evening. And he came and he capped it off, said, I don't have a valve. But so then I called this other guy later on. So I got the water taken care of that night. Well, this guy came over, replaced the pipe, but didn't give me a nice valve to turn off, just a sprinkler part. So when I'm amused at it all, and then I went and turned off the sprinkler, turned off the water, and I said, okay, well, I'll turn it back on, and the sprinkler system will then, maybe a valve got stuck. You know, I've turned it off, it'll all be right. So then I go turn on, the sprinkler system comes off. So I laughed, said, well, okay, I'm going to turn it on, go take a shower, then I come out and turn it off. So we'll just turn it off and on all day. So then I turned it on, off. Well, I eat breakfast first. Then I went, well, I would turn it back on. Turn it on, the sprinkler system went down. Like, ah. But, you know, we have moments like that. And you really think about it. How ridiculous is that, that that becomes even an anxiety? You know, I suddenly think, well, do I leave it running? Does City of Arlington come and give me a ticket because I'm running it after 10 and my flood drowned? You know, we can go into moments and, boy, we're right there in that sense of this is horrendous. This is catastrophic. And it doesn't take much. It doesn't sometimes. And boom, we're down that road. And yet, the reality is many of those things, when we really look at them, are ridiculous. Many ridiculous. Now, it doesn't. We've got to know how to not avoid the present reality. I mean, James Stockdale dealt with an experience that was extreme that none of us have been exposed to, and I hope I never am exposed to. But he didn't deny the present reality. I didn't just go and say, "Oh well, God will turn off the sprinkler system, and I'll just figure it." We have to deal with present reality, but we have to know how to keep that perspective. And there's healing, there's power, there's energy when we know how to understand our present reality, but know where we're going. Know where that plan is. And I think in light of our individual lives and our lives as a community of believers, we have to know how to have that. Where are we going? How are we moving forward? But also, where are we in the present reality? And as we put those two together, there can be a dynamic presence. There can be a lot of exciting things happen. And I think it requires us to recognize how God is part of this world. And He is interested in each one of us. You know, sometimes it's easy to get caught in the ridiculousness of the world and to get caught up into the things that we get caught into. But the reality is He is as concerned about what's going on with you and me as He is with everything else. And that when you really think about it, that blows my mind. What does that really mean? It means just that. He is as interested and as concerned and wants for us to have the fullness, the peace that you read about. He wants that and is doing everything He can so that that will be realized. Paul writes in Philippians chapter 2, verse 12. So then, my beloved, just as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Boy, what does that mean? Work out your salvation with fear and trembling. To me, that's a very simple thing. Is, hey, this isn't about being, this is about knowing how to live in that peace that Jeff talked about. Knowing how to experience, recognize. He goes on to say, for it is God who is at work in you, both to will and to work for His good pleasure. Do all things without grumbling or disputing. I like that. Do all things without grumbling or disputing. That you may prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent, children of God above reproach in the midst of crooked and perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights in the world. Now, he was talking to those people there. What would he be saying today? I think the same thing. How are we a light to the world? How do we handle ourselves in experiences of adversity so that there is a recognition that there is something different? I mean, those are powerful things to recognize. Holding fast the word of life so that in the day of Christ I may have cause to glory because I did not run in vain nor toil in vain. But even if I am being poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrifice and service of your faith, I rejoice and share my joy with you all. And you too, I urge you, rejoice in the same way and share joy with me. Now, this was written when Paul was having all kinds of things happen to him. But he's saying, let's share our joy together. Let's know how to recognize what does it mean to believe in God. What does it mean to believe in Jesus Christ as our personal Savior? Sometimes we struggle that, and I guess that's why I think, for me, optimism is something that I like to think about in relationship to who I in my life would I say that about. And that's why I brought up John's name, because like I said, I don't know a lot about him. Years ago when I came here to this church, I knew he was in there, and then in being in this class, but every time he was here, he was present, he was encouraging, and he was wanting you to know that he is doing fine. And that, I don't think he was avoiding the present reality. He'd talk about what's going on, he'd talk about the challenges, he'd talk about the hopes, but he was doing fine. What a powerful thing to recognize. We're doing fine, even though our present challenges are not things that we would necessarily want. And how do we recognize that? You know, as a counselor working with people coming to my office, they're always coming in and you know, after working in this field for a while, you realize that to them it seems so powerful, the things they're distressed about. But you recognize the more they're really wanting to know how to experience a sense of wholeness. You know, they're wanting to know how to feel something beyond that moment they're in. And they're caught. They're caught in those moments, whether it be in the relationship issues, whether it be in the work stress, whether it be just an anxiety. I mean, this one person came to me this morning, and he was just talking about his anxiety disorder. And he is all about his anxiety. And I'm thinking, you know, And you know, it's part of me is like, there's really very little I do. But I just really talked to him. I just was right there at the moment. And then I said, well, what's your belief in God? Well, I believe in God, but I haven't gone to church in a while. That's usually the first thing they say. And he's like, well, what does that have to do with believing in God? I'm just asking you, what's your belief in God? But this man, you could see his anxiety and his fear. And yet, for that moment he was in my office, there was just a presence of just being there. And I think that's what each of us need with each other. Why do we keep coming and sharing like we do? Because something happens when we share. Something happens when we can laugh, when we can kid about things, when we can share our concerns, our things. Something happens. That's what Paul was saying. Share your joy with me. Something happens when we share our joy. I know what happens to me is I become more encouraged. I become more animated. I become more alive. And in that process, a lot of things happen to my body. A lot of things happen to my social experience. And we can do that with each other. Tell me what your thoughts. I could get going on and on. But tell me what your thoughts. And go ahead.
Nothing comes to us except that it goes through Christ first. Mm-hmm. And that really bothered me when I read it. I didn't like that. I think that Jesus is letting, we've been through a lot in the last few years. Jesus is letting this bad stuff happen. Mm-hmm. So the more I studied that out, okay, we pray about this. Mm-hmm. I studied that out. And if you think about it, and you go to the armor of God, every piece of that represents Jesus. Mm-hmm. So if you're clothed in the armor of God, I'm very simplistic. Mm-hmm. I can picture myself being Christ righteousness, and then have Jesus around you. So it really is coming through Him. Mm-hmm. So if He allows it to come through, there's a reason. Mm-hmm. And that can give you peace. And like he was saying about rejoicing in these things, it doesn't mean we like it.
Oh, absolutely not.
But he can give you the peace that he has. Mm-hmm. But at least I let that anxiety overwhelm it to, okay, mm-hmm. let this happen, there's a reason. So then the peace comes back. Mm-hmm. And then you can be optimistic about things that are going to happen, because as you look back and see what he's done, the next one's like, oh yeah, he did this, so what's he going to do this time? Mm-hmm. So I think that each time we go through an experience like this, we grow and we become more optimistic. At least I have. Mm-hmm. I'm more optimistic because we see that God is there. He mm-hmm. never leaves. Mm-hmm. He never lets anything happen to us that He is not allowed. And He didn't cause it. He didn't cause it.
That's true. That's an important thing.
But He allows it to happen sometimes. It's for our growth. It's for mm-hmm. us to grow, to be more like
Him. I believe that. And I think, you know, that whole idea of God doesn't cause things, I think that's an important thing. He allows because He loves. I mean, you think about it. Think about the time when He said to Moses, let me blot these people out and we'll start over and build a great nation through you. Moses was saying, God, what would that do to you and your reputation? What would it do to the Egyptians? They would believe this. So I think we have to recognize that what God is allowing is for Him, His character be revealed so that we may know and really worship and understand who He is. So these things that happen to us, I mean, they're intense. They're challenging. But I think when we recognize that God is really wanting for us to know how He loves us, that and I use that a lot with parents, because a lot of times they'll tell me, well, one guy was talking about a 30-year-old son, and I said, listen, let's talk about this. You know, how do you see God relating to us? And that's a really challenging thing to realize, that we have to allow out of love. I mean, the thing is, sometimes we want to say, well, He's indifferent or He doesn't care. But the reality, it is the ultimate of love. And sometimes we have a hard time finding that. Go ahead.
When many years ago, my mom had multiple sclerosis. Mm-hmm. And she was a guinea pig in the 60s for all the doctors to try to figure this thing out. And 2 weeks before her first grandson was to be born, she went to the hospital, and we were all called there, and I went to her room and laid my hands on her. I wasn't a religious person at the time, but I've always been a spiritual person. And I prayed that she'd be healed, and that something happened, the doctors rushed us back out, and I'm looking out the window, and it's just rain and rain and rain, and all of a sudden a little cloud opens up, and the sun hits me. And I'm warming all the way through my body that I can never explain. And the door knocks. Doctor walks in and says she passed. Mm-hmm. And I turned back and there was none more clouds. Mm-hmm. But that experience that he was with me. And for all the other people that were in that room, my son was born 2 weeks to the day in the same hospital that she passed. And everybody in the family will look at him and say, I see her eyes.
Wow.
So he is the most frustrating moment of my life.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And what a gift he gave.
And what a gift. And I think at that moment, we have, and as we reflect on those moments, wow, what happens to us as we then move forward in our life? To me, that's profound optimism, because we recognize how in that moment you were wanting something totally different than what you got. You what?
I thought I had it.
And you thought you had it. But you really had it all along. And what a gift.
Oh, how do you say you can change it now? You know, because it was a tipping point.
Mm-hmm. It really was. And I think that to me is what we're talking about, is that recognition that in our mind, it's not on our schedule. It's on God's. And you think about it, you know, the disciples, what did they believe as they started this church? Thousands of people joined. We're reading that in Ernie's Friday night thing. Thousands of people would join after a sermon. They believed it was going to be in their lifetime. Well, here we are 2,000 years later. And yet, I don't think it's any different today as far as our belief. And I don't care if it happens now or 2,000 years from now. I believe and I know in what I believe. And that to me is a powerful thing of optimism. Whether we have a church in 2011 that's different or 2050 is not my concern. It's how do we move ourselves forward as a group of believers? How do we continue the process of doing what we need to so we're in a state? Go ahead, you were going to say something.
Things come along in our lives that we're not expecting. I always try to remember that this incident, if it didn't possess glorious promise, God would disown it. Mm-hmm. We have to leave timing with God.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Go ahead.
And then the power of being able to share what you've gone through with someone who's a new Christian. Mm-hmm. Not forgetting God's goodness and being able to recall when you experience those same things,
mm-hmm.
it's so powerful.
Oh, it is. There's the teacher learns the most in teaching. Amen. Go ahead.
Your name's Dawson.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what was going on through that man's mind. How optimistic did he feel when he was one by one carrying the wounded soldiers up that hill and lowered them back over the escarpment?
Yeah, you know that he must have had a tremendous sense of purpose in what he was doing. And it was like, same as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I'm going to do this. What the results will be, will be. That's a powerful thing. And I think it's all of us has to recognize in our life, how do we get caught in something so finite that we lose sight of really what this all is about? How do we get something that we didn't think we needed or wanted, and then it becomes the defining moment? Go ahead.
I think that also goes along with, or he made me think of, the verse that says, I can do all things through Christ. Mm-hmm. And with Christ, there's nothing that's impossible. Mm-hmm. And then realizing, knowing that and realizing when the key element in that is not us, but Christ.
Right.
And if he chooses otherwise, all is well with my soul.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Shall we pray? Dear God, we're so grateful we can come together and share thoughts and ideas. But we know that your presence is with us, even though we don't sense it at times. As we continue to live our lives, may we recognize more fully your presence so that we really can be the light to the world that you intend us to be. As we leave this place and may we enjoy the rest of Sabbath day. In your name, amen.